Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to ThinkBigRadio.com. I'm Ray Vision, your host, and I'm with my co-host, Nefri Amini, and you're listening to Ponder This. Ponder This is a series focusing on the art of allowing, trusting, being, and finding inner self. Ponder This will explore new ways of thinking. Through a conversational journey, we will be questioning and discussing the art of allowing, trust, being, and how finding inner self can bring us to a place of abundance in life where we can begin to focus on bigger things. So let's get ready to ponder this.
Hey, everybody. This is Ray Vision. I'm on with Veronica Conway. How are you, Veronica?
Hey, good morning, Corey. I'm great. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. It's a Friday. It's a hot Friday in New York, so summer is here for me. So I'm surviving.
Ooh, yeah. I'm sure.
How about you? How about you?
It's beautiful. It's nice here in Northern California. I'm in Sacramento, and it's a very peaceful morning.
Okay, beautiful. Well, we got a heavy topic for people today. But before we get started, I want to make two announcements. Under Double E Productions, I'm involved with two projects, and I'm really, it kind of pertains to what we're talking about today. I really want people to pay attention. I support and empower black images of people in arts and entertainment. I'm currently involved with a conference that will be happening in November called Unlock Your Dreams, and we're looking for black businesses to support and sponsor this conference that happens in November. It is produced by Georgia RCC, and you can go to unlockyourdreams.com. We are celebrating the lives of those who have unlocked their dreams, and not everybody is famous. Some people are just coming from the general walks of life and doing big things in their life, and it's a two-day conference. The first day will be Black Wall Street, where we are hosting black businesses, and so you can shop black, buy black, and then that same day there's a main conference, and then on Saturday there will be a banquet and a discussion about from those that have unlocked their dreams, so there's a Q&A that will be happening. So look forward to that. That's unlockyourdreams.info. I'm also supporting an artist called China L. Colston. She is a phenomenal writer, and if you are on my Facebook page, you have heard me speak about her a few times. She is looking to raise a few more dollars for her short called Sweet Thing. Well-written, and the actors that are in it are truly talent that we should be seeing on our screen, and I'm a big believer in black, supporting black. Buy black is also buying black art and supporting black art. So I want people to go to ChinaColston.com, or you can find her at China L. Colston on Facebook. Learn about Sweet Thing also on Facebook and support her. So I'm just asking and putting a call out there for her. But today we are talking about, can we cure the effects of racism? And this is where I've known Veronica for a few years now. She is a CPCC, and I want you to explain that a little later, what that is, often dubbed as the secret weapon by her clients. Veronica is an award-winning entrepreneur and founder of three coaching companies, including the Black Professional Coaches Alliance, the world's first coaching organization dedicated to the transformation of people of African descent. She is also the founder of Black Mastery World Summit, the first and largest digital gathering of the Black Thought Leaders, or of Black Thought Leaders. Welcome again, Veronica. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Corey. It's always a pleasure to hang with you, my brother.
Yes, yes, yes. We've been hanging for a while, and I did just say.
I know.
Veronica is a. There's no words. You are. That's what I'm going to say. You are. If you have not experienced, I've experienced some of her coaching. I've witnessed, being a part of her projects, and she's really doing some big things. She's phenomenal. She's a life changer when it comes to her coaching. She has changed mine, and I still apply a lot of the things that I've learned from you in business. Mm-hmm. But Veronica, explain a little bit about, you know, some of the other things that you're doing and so that people know a little bit more and can catch up to where you are in 2017.
Yeah, thank you, Corey. So, you know, when I really look at, I've done a lot of things, you know, and as I sometimes said, I've been in the Negro business for a long time. And what I mean by that is I've been in the business of the transformation of us, our people, because I think we need it the most. I think we deserve it the most. And I think we are the greatest source of sort of under-realized potential that the planet has ever experienced, right? And so much of it has to do with our history. But when I look at all of the work that I've done, whether it's, you know, gotten my two black children, $1.2 million in fancy private school education for $20,000, to, you know, founding movements that would have an impact in our community, to learning technologies that would really unleash our potential both personally and in a business economic sense, I really look at my work as, I call it sort of changing the balance of power. How do we change the balance of power? And one of the ways that we change the balance of power is that we redesign, remix, reconfigure our own mindset, behavior, thoughts, strategies around business so that we can be our most powerful selves. So that's really, if I were to look at the, you know, I've been in business for 18 years. I just had an 18-year work anniversary for my company, the Revolution Group. And that if there's been a single theme that has shown up on each of my projects, it's really that.
And I think that's why I'm aligned with you. I'm trying to do it through images, and you're doing it through the mindset. And actually, those two hand in hand, because, you know, it's the images that are around the world that also influence our minds. But there's a history, too, that has created and has gone from generation to generation that has also altered our minds. And let me ask you this first question. When it comes to, how do you define racism?
For me, racism, you know, and I'm sort of privy and privileged to be an observer of the shift in the zeitgeist that has happened culturally, right? I would say 10 years ago, back when I was, you know, banging the drum around race and racism, people were afraid to talk about it. Black folks were afraid to talk about it. It was this very sort of subterranean conversation. And now it's kind of out in the open. I would say that Ferguson and all the issues that happened down there was a real turning point. That sort of ignited the revolution. That was the match, right? So it shifted, and the conversation has shifted. And so there's a lot of ideas, illusions, myths, mythologies out here about what racism is. My belief is that racism is sort of the systematic, institutionalized oppression, suppression, repression of a people based on genetics, based on really based on a dominant gene pattern, right? We have dominant DNA in the black community. And we've been, you know, and so the more melanin you have, the more dominant you are, your gene patterns are, the more likely you are to experience racism from the dominant culture. So racism is sort of the practice of looking at skin color, and deciding to suppress it, repress it, you know, by any means necessary, economically, to do it through separation, to do it through different policies, you know, to do it through the prison industrial complex. And so it's been a long-standing institutional movement to suppress people of melanated people.
Right, right. And how have you experienced racism in your life?
Well, you know, my daddy, I'm the daughter of a former Black Panther, and so before age 7, you know, I lived in an underground communist Marxist Black Panther collective. My parents had shootouts with the cops. I experienced death threats against my life. And then my father got busted. He went to prison when I was 7, and he's been held there illegally, many would say, since 1972. So I've directly experienced the impact of the institutionalized, systematized incarceration of black men that was happening back then. My dad, in many respects, was a pioneer. He was saying the stuff that Black Lives Matter is saying, that the Occupy movement was saying. He was saying that back in the 60s and 70s. And he had, you know, about income inequality and the fact that the police could come into our community and, you know, do whatever they wanted, which is very similar today. The police are coming into our community and doing whatever they wanted. And so what many people don't know is that the Black Panthers formulated to police the police, to protect the women and children of the community against
right.
police. And so when I look at racism, it impacted me personally because it took my father. But
right.
when I look around at the world and I look at how black potential is marginalized on purpose,
mm-hmm.
systemically,
mm-hmm.
then I know that, you know, we have more work to do.
Right. And can you, in listening to what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
and as we are fighting and working towards creating some equality, or
mm-hmm.
what are we working to do? What are we trying to do when it comes to racism? This is like a two-part question here because listening to you, there is, you're saying, the dominant culture that enacts racism. Through the laws, through
yep.
various systems of schooling, of prison, and the workplace.
Yep.
But then have we also incorporated their ways within our own culture? We are the subsidiary movement
yeah.
with racism?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because, you know, understand the power of the colonization of the mind, right? Our minds have been colonized along with our bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're the only people, the African in America is the only person, really, that as a large collective has not only been the subject of 400 years of military warfare, but also a psychological warfare campaign. Because let's get real. If you're 12% of the population, which is what Europeans are, and you want to dominate the other 88% of the planet, you can't simply do it through military warfare tactics, right? You have to also colonize the mind. Otherwise, you have to do that through media. You have to do that through religion. You have to do that through movements that are going to have people be subservient and docile, so they won't rise up and kick your ass, basically, right? So it's both physical warfare and psychological warfare. And so, you know, I've been a researcher of the psychological warfare because I think it's one of the most important things. I think it's one of the most subtle and invisible things that we are experience that keeps us oppressed. That we don't pay attention to because it's the water in which we swim. So when that's the water in which you swim, when that permeates your psyche, when that permeates your consciousness through every possible medium, then you end up colluding with your own oppression. So let me give you an example. So when I looked at the impact of, say, hip-hop and rap, you know, hip-hop started out as really a political movement. Right, it started out talking about the conditions of the hood, and started out talking about you know, fuck the police, and it was a political movement. And then when it first started out, when you looked at how they calculated totals for hip hop music, they did it manually, right? When they would do the sound scan and look at what was the top 40 and all of that was all done manually. In the advent of the computerization and the digitization of that process, they woke up and realized that hip-hop was viable. It was a real moneymaker. It was really a phenomenon, and they didn't know that before. So they let it go sort of unchecked, the European music executives, because they didn't realize what a lucrative phenomenon it was and the impact that it had on black youth. The other thing about hip-hop music is, you know, I'm a master hypnotist. I studied hypnotism because I understand that we've been being hypnotized, and so to to, you know,
right.
unwind us. We have to reprogram us. We have to dehypnotize ourselves. So that's why I studied that. But when you look at hip hop, what is it? It's you know, intense, sometimes aggressive lyrics laid over a hypnotic beat. So if you change, so a hypnotic beat, a binaural beat, meaning it's going to put you into a state of trance. And so if you now change it from a political movement to, you know, bitches and hoes, and look, I'm balling at the club, then you effectively change the messaging to reprogram an entire generation. And so the hip-hop executives and music executives made a conscious decision to do that, not only so they could capitalize on the economics of it, but so you could hijack the psyche of a generation. And that's what's happened.
Yeah.
So that's just one form of the psychological assault that we've experienced, and we don't even know that's what's going on. Not really.
Right. No, yeah, not really. Because it's also gone into not only the hip-hop, but, you know, our R&B a little bit. You know,
sure.
We're here.
It's everywhere.
A whole bunch of,
So it's a really profound way to get a people to participate in their own dysfunction, their own oppression, their own, because, you know, if I can grab your subconscious mind and hijack it and program it and tell it to do what I want it to do. And if you think about it, the major black institutions are a form of that programming, whether it's the church or it's the music industry or it's the way we get marketed and advertised to and the images that we see in the general media. That's why what your work is doing is so, what the work that you're doing is so important. It's every major institution impacts us that way. We're sort of under assault in the psychological warfare game.
Yeah, and to the point where actually the game has gotten to the point where we really don't control that mainstream element anymore. So,
correct.
We have been checked, but we haven't been mated. So, in order to, you know, let's get the solution. Let me let the people know the number here is 909-232-9222. You can call in with questions. But let's get to the solutions. Can we cure racism? Is that a real?
Well, it's an interesting question. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think, you know. So one of the things that I've really been cognizant of, as we've seen the ascent of Trump. And this, what I'm going to say is this global consolidation of white nationalist power, because that's all this is about. That's what Trump's about. That's what Russia's about. That's what Brexit's about. It's all a consolidation of global white power, because and the rise of the alt-right. And so what has happened, if you think about the track of events that's happened since Ferguson, and when you know Obama got into office, and we keep having these police shootings, and then Ferguson happens, and that kind of lights the fire keg, and we get, I think as black folks, we have outrage fatigue, right? Because we understand, you know, what's happening. We understand, even if we don't understand the parameters of it, even if we haven't studied it, let's say from a military warfare point of view, we understand as humans that something's wrong, that something's deeply wrong, and there's a new outrage every day, and we get some outrage fatigue, and part of the outrage fatigue that we go into is that we can't believe that there's a group of people that would keep doing the shit that they're doing every day. We just kind of can't believe it, even though we've been experiencing this globally for hundreds and hundreds of years. So the first thing I think that we have to do is we have to find a way to almost stop the adrenaline-based outrage mechanisms that happen in our bodies. Because as long as we're in a state of outrage, we have no equilibrium as black people.
Right.
Right, because we're emotionally, we are a living, breathing response to what we're experiencing, as opposed to being strategic, methodic, plotters and planners of our own freedom, right?
Right.
So you can't be both sort of knocked off balance all the time and be a living, breathing reaction to something and be also proactive about it. Those two don't occupy the same space, right? So the first thing we have to do is we've got to turn off the outrage machine in a certain way. And then second, and then get real clear and get real quiet and get real internal, both as individuals and collectively. And you know, I say you can't organize effectively, collectively until you reorganize internally and personally. Understand that we are never going to change the heart of the racist. They are on, they have their agenda. They are on what they are on about. They mean to have and accumulate 100% of the world's resources. That's what this is really about. And your black ass is simply a collateral damage on the way to the owning of all of the resources of the planet. And they're on about that. And they're never going to change that. And so melanation will always be perceived as a threat to them because of the potential for genetic annihilation. In other words, if the world got together and made love, whiteness would cease to exist within the next few generations. And they know it. They say it. The alt-right, they all say it. You know, diversity is genetic annihilation. They're out. They say it. The more radical of them tell the truth and say it out loud. So they're never going to change because they believe that their genetic survival is at stake. And for them to survive, they have to begin to annihilate and eradicate melanation on the planet. So we got to understand that we ain't going to change them. We will never change them. However, what we must understand is we must understand our two forms of power that we possess. We must first understand our personal individual power, really understand it, our capacity to act, our agency, our personal authority over our own lives. So many of us are bopping around out here, and we feel so out of control. We feel like we've got to go to jobs that we hate, and we got to be with people that don't like us, and we got to live in places that we don't want to, and we have forgotten our own power and sovereignty and autonomy as individuals. So we have to reclaim that. That's where I come in. I do it for both people's personal lives. I do it for their business lives. You know, we got to get our money together, and then we have to look at our power collectively. And we have power collectively that is grossly underutilized. Understand that with 1.1, 1.2 billion people in Africa and throughout the diaspora, we are a bigger global population than China. We're just not aligned with one another economically as a political force. We have a global footprint and presence.
Yeah.
But we're fragmented. And so we remain distracted out of that fragmentation, right? So we would have to get, but in order to understand who we are collectively, we first have to understand who we are personally and individually, and the amount of agency and autonomy that we have as individual people. Then you can sort of understand yourself as your brother's keeper, as your brother's brother and sister, right? So understanding power is critical for both personally and collectively.
Mm-hmm. I thought that in this day and age of digital technology that we would figure that out by now. It's 2017. And even though we are fragmented, that we know that we could come together, even though there's so many various umbrella groups, you know, on the social media, but it seems like they tend to still talk about, I'm going to leave it there, because it's still a talk, but it's not the implementation of solutions.
Correct. Correct. And so to me, when I look at human behavior, you know, because I've been in the human, like I said, I've been in the Negro business for a long time. When I look at human behavior, I say you either have results or you have reasons. You either have the results that you want or you have a story about why you can't have it. We're still stuck on the story. Right, because even with all of our collective firepower, the platform of social media, we tend to be consumers of social media and not producers and generators on social media. That's why we want to do the Black Master World Summit. We want to create an economy. We want to leverage, you know, people's social media presence and their, you know, and turn it as a force for activism and economics. But we don't we don't recognize the power and the agency and the sovereignty that we can utilize those means for. So the reason that we don't have the results, you know, if we really knew our personal power and we knew our collective power, we could change the game overnight. We're that powerful. Mm-hmm. Our intent is that powerful. Our collective soulful presence is that powerful. There's still something missing, because if there weren't, we would be performing and behaving as a unified people. So there's something in this, there's something that we still haven't gotten in our own narrative, or we'd be doing it. Right? We would be doing it.
Right. We would be doing it. Do we know what that something is? Or is it a variety of different? I mean, to me, there's only two things.
I think we still don't understand. I think there's a couple of things. I think we still don't understand our personal power and agency. If
right.
we did, we would. So, for example, people, you know, we keep sitting around asking for white people for jobs because,
right.
you know, black unemployment, whatever they say it is, it's about 40% in the inner city for black men across the country. Whatever America's unemployment situation, it's compounded by times 10 for black people. But what's also true is that every black business, you know, most businesses that are black businesses are one person, they're solopreneurs. If every
right.
black business could hire a black person, we would eradicate unemployment tomorrow. Ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
We have the power
sure.
to do that ourselves. It just takes
right.
hiring a black person, right, into our business as entrepreneurs. So but the fact that even the 1 point to however many million entrepreneurs, black entrepreneurs there are in this country, the fact that we don't know that as a collective of black entrepreneurs, despite the fact that we are potentially connected via social media, means there's still something missing. We haven't made the connection. We haven't gotten enough, again, autonomy, agency in our own individual lives to make the connection to bridge to the collective. Because if we did,
see,
we'd lose the sort of a hive mind.
Right. I have an issue with that. If we want to go backwards, we're always looking at black history and talking about our
mm-hmm.
successes, talking about all these people that
mm-hmm.
founded this and discovered this and created this. And then we go and talk about Black Wall Street. We're talking about communities
yep.
of black people who held it down, you know, entrepreneurially. And so you can't say that
yes.
we haven't done it. We've done it. We've maintained it for
correct.
A few years. All there was people
correct.
Came in and warred on our communities and burnt it down. My thing is build it back up. It's not like we don't like what is in the minds of people. See, I'm getting hot.
right.
You know, that
right.
says we can't work together when our history from slavery in this country prior to slavery
right.
in this country, we worked together.
Right.
You're saying, so the last 200 years, we can't figure it out? We're better educated.
Well, when I talk,
we're making more money.
When I talked about outrage fatigue, understand that, you know, black progress in this country is always met with white fear and retribution. Always. Trump is punishment for Obama. Right?
right?
And what a punishment
right.
it is, right? so understand that every time we, historically, and this isn't me saying this, this is a history book saying this, every time we make collectivized progress, it's met with white fear and retribution. And so we are experiencing and witnessing that today. And the problem is that we as a people, you know, there is a psychological battering and wounding that, you know, there's a reason that they kill brothers and let cops off the hook. There's a reason that they show the worst of our condition on television. There's a reason that they've let the worst aspects of hip-hop come through. Because, again, when we go back to the psychological warfare, you know, and the constant erosion and the wearing down of the mind, the constant colonization of the mind, right? It keeps us in a state of powerlessness, of learned helplessness, right?
Right.
And so
the strategy.
So while we carry all of that possibility, history, the stuff in our DNA in us, all the power. We also carry the wounding. You know, they are realizing that wounding and trauma gets handed down epigenetically in the DNA, right? That people that were that are ancestors of Jews, they studied the Jewish community. The science is finally figuring this out. I've been knowing this. That the trauma gets handed down and it impacts the DNA. Well, no one's been through a greater Holocaust and trauma on this planet, and a larger one than the African, right? We've been through a greater Holocaust than any group of people on the planet, and that's gotten handed down in our DNA. So just as greatness has gotten handed down, so has trauma. And so when we react and begin to experience learned helplessness, understand that it was designed that way. So in some ways, it's not our fault. However, it's our responsibility to understand that and do something to change it dramatically.
Hmm.
Not our fault, but it's our responsibility because they ain't going to fix us. We're going to have to heal
ourselves.
They're
not. No, it's not in their budget to fix us. It's just so... For me, it has always been interesting, but I think, you know, we all have a partner role to play.
Yes.
And, you know, you're right. I guess the trauma is overwhelming, the power of fear, because that is the strategy. I don't call it white supremacy anymore, and I call it the ruling elite, and I call it the right strategy. It's a strategy that has been used. And if we are, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. I say this is amazing, especially when it comes to black men and this whole sports thing. You know, on Saturdays we can go out and play basketball. We can pick and choose our teams and desire to win. But, you know, for some reason when it comes to doing the same thing off the court, just regular guys coming to the court on a Saturday, we can pick and choose and pick our winning team because you know who plays well. But it seems like when we leave that court, when we leave that place or that space in the park, we cannot take that same strategy and apply it to our lives. We want to, be mediocre. You know, we're not looking, oh, wow, this guy has done this or this woman has done that. And, you know, let me strategize with them. Let me call them up and see if they want to work with me. This person is doing monumental things. And let's come and develop a strategy. Everybody stays in their lane, you know.
Right, and that's what I'm saying we can't do it collectively until we organize ourselves individually. In other words, we have to understand that we have to exercise our personal advocacy and sovereignty in our own lives, in our own businesses, in our own spaces, with our children. And until we grow that, it's hard to come together collectively. We get dysfunctional, we infight, we do a lot of things. That's why I've been behind the scenes on a lot of black movements and the egos and the infighting because of our wounding, we meet wound to wound. So when we try to get stuff done, we're not person to person, soul to soul. We're wound to wound, right? And so, we gotta get clear about that.
Okay. So, are there any what things can be done to heal those wounds?
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the things I was reading a while ago, I did an interview with Charles Ogletree, who was really the sort of, you know, primary force for reparations in this country. He was Obama's professor at Harvard, and I did an interview with him a while back, and you know, they were looking at reparations, and the whole planet's been looking at reparations. And one of the things that's interesting is that the Caribbean folks that are suing, you know, the British Crown and France for reparations, one of the things that some of the folks on there were saying was that before you actually give up, if we were to win reparations, which is, you know, sort of a moral stand that the European world has taken, we're not going to apologize, nor are we going to provide reparations, because that would mean, we don't want to bankrupt our economies, because all these economies were built on the backs of black people. So it's kind of an interesting thing that's happening there. But they said that, you know, even if you got reparations, we'd have to heal black people's minds. that the prime ministers of Caribbean were saying, what I've been saying for decades, you know, which is that you'd have to heal our minds. And so there's a recent technology, and I've been a master hypnotist and neuro-linguistic programming specialist for a long time, and I've applied it to a lot of different things. For, you know, I coach Black entrepreneurs, I've coached the NBA, you know, Fortune 100 CEOs, mostly Black. You know, I've mm-hmm. made my living with my brothers and sisters, and that's because, you know, I've wanted to see us use, you know, what I'm not going to sit on a couch for 10 years. I need something that's going to be fast and effective. And so one of the things that I've come into contact with the most recently that I really want to begin to, I'm working, using it to work with business owners, I'm using it to work with cultural wounding, is a process that I'm calling soul surgery. And it's probably the most effective technology that I've seen to heal traumas. And you'd be amazed at the sort of global effect that a single trauma can have. So, for example, so the idea is that when you have a traumatic event, you actually, if you believe in the soul or the aura, right, the light body that we exist in this spaceship called the suit, space suit that we live in called a body, there's a soul. And when you have traumatic events, literally a part of your soul fragments off and you leave it there at this moment of trauma. Right, you leave it with in houses. You leave a part of your soul with people. You've had your heart broken. You leave it in certain events. You leave it in certain locations, and so it literally, you don't have all of yourself, all of your soul with you when you have these traumatic events. Well, nobody's experienced more traumatic events than we have. Just nobody.
Right.
And so this process is a very fast process for calling the parts of one's soul back to them. So let me just give you a sense of how it operates in the real world. So even for myself. When I went in and looked at that for a long time, you know, the trauma of, you know, my dad getting arrested when I was 6 years old, and just, you know, cops came in with a battering ram and busted us, put a gun to my head. You know, I went into foster homes where he had a trial. We were getting death threats. It was this whole big thing. And when I went in and asked my body and my soul, like, you know, what are some of the impacts that have happened because of that? It was like, it's impacted my money situation over the years. It's given me a great sense of sort of housing uncertainty in the background. Like, I always felt like somebody was going to come yank me out of my house, whether I was paying rent or a mortgage. I always felt that. And so when I went back to that event of that arrest and really reclaimed my soul, did a soul retrieval, it was the first time that I felt at home on the planet. It was impacting my money as a business owner. It was impacting my sense of certainty in terms of the housing that I lived in. When I went back and did that, like a 35-minute process, I finally felt like I was at home on the planet for the very first time in my life. So here's this event that's out of my racialized trauma and wounding that's impacting my life today and in a negative way, my business, my personal life. And in 30 minutes, I called that part of myself back to me, restored it back to myself, and have literally been on fire, feeling at home in the world, making, you know, generating even more money just within days of having done it. There's something that's so profound to operate at this level. So this is probably the deepest work out of all the methodologies and modalities that I have explored, and there's been many. The most profound and short one that I think could help resolve cultural trauma, right? To call, because if we got ourselves realigned, if we called the most powerful parts of us back to ourselves, who would we be then on this planet? Who would we be in our business? Who would we be as, you know, the leaders and stewards of our family and our community? What could we create if we weren't operating with soul wounding? And that's exactly what's happening out here on the planet. So that's my solution for today, is get yourself organized. And then as you do that, it becomes obvious about how to mobilize our community. It becomes obvious about how to partner and pair up and lead and follow. And, you know, it becomes obvious as you get more of yourself back.
Okay. Wow, that's deeper than deep. It makes a whole lot of sense when you're thinking about, well, me being a spiritual person. Because that is the whole of you, is the spirit of you. And to,
yes.
You're calling it spiritual surgery? What soul surgery?
It's soul surgery, yeah. It literally goes in and recalls parts of your soul back to yourself. And so it has an amazing impact. And so, you know, we're going to have to be whole to deal with whatever this onslaught is, to deal with businesses that we want to grow, to raise families that we're proud of, right, to deal with the economic war that's on the horizon. We're going to have to be whole humans, right? We're going to need all the parts of ourselves to be able to withstand what is surely going to be an onslaught, because it's just getting started. Like, let's make no mistake. It's all this stuff out here, they're just getting started. Elephant's nose is in the tent. And so we have to get ourselves together, like I said, both personally. We have to organize ourselves internally, and then only then can we effectively organize collectively. Listen, enough of us individually get ourselves together, we will reach a tipping point. There will be enough critical mass that we can turn the zeitgeist into the narrative of our choosing, right? But enough of us have to be sovereign. Enough of us have to be truly autonomous, both personally and economically, right? We have to do that. And then there'll be a tipping point which we could cross over, which where the primary predominant narrative is one of our power and not of our oppression. But we're going enough of us will have to come together individually to cause that.
Right. Well, look, we've got 3 minutes left. I want you to let people know how to find you. Because there's a lot of people out there that could be using and needing this surgery. A soul that is intact is a soul that can actually move and expand. So
unleashed, baby. Activated.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That
so
is right.
So right now you can find me I'm about to totally rebrand all my websites and all my stuff. I'm so excited. I've got a new brand coming out, You Unleashed, Your Business Unleashed, Your Activism Unleashed, right? So I'm going to do a whole Unleashed series in my business. But until such time, I'm under construction right now. You can catch me. You can email me at veronica@veronicaconway.com. I've got a 7-year-old website at veronicaconway.com. It's old. It's got old stuff on there. But you can see what I was doing, 7 years ago. If you want to just kind of, reach out to me personally, you can just email me at veronica@veronicaconway.com, and we can chop it up about, what you might need. I help people scale businesses real fast. Now that I'm doing this soul surgery, it's just a quantum leap. I mean, you can go fast. I'm about that life right now. I'm about decolonizing, our minds and businesses and getting our heads on straight and getting us clear about money, clear about our legacy, clear about the community, clear about ourselves. And so, just email me and let's chop it up.
Okay. That sounds awesome. I might be calling you after this. like I said, Veronica is the queen of what she does. And for anybody who wants to know about her, like she says, you can email her. We'll have the information up on our Facebook and up on ponderthis.com, as well as, you can always see this on thinkbigradio.com. I want to give a shout-out to one of my viewers, one of my number one fans, Jennifer. Thank you for listening today. And for all those that are looking to be better, do better, become better, feel better. You gave some really good points, the fact that we've got to get off the outrage machine, and speaking about really owning and knowing our power and understanding that as an individual, as a collective. So, Veronica is here for you. Make sure that you reach out to her the best way you can. And the internet is the best way to get in contact with everybody. So I want to thank everybody for listening today. Veronica, thank you for being my guest today and bringing this information.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fun.
Yes, you're welcome. My pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful.
Okay, we are complete.